doing. And welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast. This is episode 13, Paul Revere. Now, I am super excited because I lucked into probably some of the best timing I possibly could for writing podcast episodes. I finished writing Paul Revere, and next week, hint, hint, we're going to do The Midnight Ride. So I was able to write two podcasts at once because here in America, it is Thanksgiving time, and this weekend is going to be crazy with stuffing my face with turkey, watching football, a whole lot of shopping, and then putting up some Christmas decorations. So we're going to get started right into Paul Revere, our third character study. Paul Revere is born January 1st, 1735, to Paul Revere Sr. and Deborah Hitchborn. Now, Paul Revere Sr. actually changed his name because he wanted it to sound more English. His name is actually Apollos Rivoire, a French immigrant that came to America when he was 13. So for any time that we're going to reference Paul Revere's father, we're calling him Apollos. I mean, come on. Apollo, god of the sun? I mean, just it's awesome. His mother, Deborah, was a Boston native and the daughter of an artisan family. Apollos himself became an artisan. After a long apprenticeship with a goldsmith, Apollos opened his own shop in the north end of Boston. A young Paul Revere would actually apprentice with his father in his shop. And the boy, by all accounts, was fully committed to his craft. Now, unfortunately, when Paul is 19, his father will die, leaving Paul to take care of not only the business, but his family as well. When the Seven Years' War actually comes to the continent, Paul Revere volunteers to fight with the colonial artillery in 1756 and is commissioned a second lieutenant. Now, I know for a fact there is all kinds of stuff that accounts for his military career during the Seven Years' War, but I didn't really get fully into that considering that's more of a discussion if you were doing a podcast on the French and Indian War and not one about the American Revolution. So we're going to just pass by that. And I actually have a really good book to recommend that I know there is at least a little bit that talks about his French and Indian career. So if anyone's interested, of course, the book recommendations are there for that. In 1757, he marries Sarah Orne, and together they have 8 kids. Now, unfortunately, she'll die in 1773. The more curious thing is why he remarried so quickly, but we'll just overlook that and say that we'll have our eyebrow raised about that, Paul Revere. He remarries Rachel Walker and has another 8 kids. I mean, there's really not much you can say, but Paul Revere, man, he knew how to father some kids. Revere became a master gold and silversmith. Now, everyone remembers Revere silver, but they also don't realize that he was also a goldsmith. Gold is an expensive commodity. A lot of merchants, even the richest of merchants, aren't going to have a lot of gold items. They're going to have a lot of silver items. Now, Revere silver is highly sought after during the colonial period. So we've mentioned apprentices before, and apprentices were just young men that worked under a master. Now, when you were a young man of, anywhere from 7 to 10, your parents would bring you to a master carpenter or blacksmith, or in this case, silversmith, and you would work with that master to learn the craft and learn how to do all the ins and outs of the craft so that you could be a successful journeyman, which was the next step. You were versed in the craft, but you weren't seen as the pinnacle of the work. You were able to work in a shop, work on your own. You didn't have to be looked after by a master. And journeymen actually, quote-unquote, journeyed. They would travel from shop to shop every so often to just gain new experience. And eventually, when they became really well-versed in their craft, they would themselves open their own shop, hopefully, and take on their own apprentices and journeymen. Now, we had said that Revere silver was extremely sought after during the colonial period. It is still considered today to be an achievement in American decorative arts. So much so that if you are lucky enough to own a piece of Revere silver, hold on to it. That is a valuable piece of history there. Now, poor Revere had to supplement his income. I mean, seriously, the man had 16 kids. He really had to supplement an income, especially during some turbulent times, especially with the early part of the revolution coming up. There were periods where, you know, the money was tight in the city of Boston. So he wasn't only a gold and silversmith, but he would take on different types of work, such as copper plate engraver. Now, copper plates were used for illustrations in books, magazines, business cards, political cartoons. I mean, the most impressive political cartoon is the Boston Massacre etching that he did. Now, this part always makes me laugh. He advertised as a dentist for a while. When money really, really got tight, he would do some dentistry, carving false teeth from things like walrus ivory and stuff like that. Now, a popular folktale of the time is that Paul Revere made the false teeth that went into George Washington's mouth. Now, everyone knows that George Washington had false teeth. He did not have wood teeth. He did not make teeth out of wood. I don't know where the wood came from. That never made any sense to me. But they would have been some sort of bone or ivory that he used. Given his station in life, I wouldn't be surprised a Virginia planter having ivory teeth. I mean, he was well off enough to afford such a thing. Now, Paul Revere, though great gold and silversmith, and as we'll find out later, had other skills, he did not have the skills required to do an entire set of upper and lower teeth. That was just beyond his skills. He could do one tooth and wire them in. He had that skill set, but he didn't have the skill set to do an entire set of teeth. So sorry to disappoint those colonial history nerds out there, but we've debunked the belief that Paul Revere made the false teeth for George Washington. Now, with all this extra work and his 16 kids, Paul Revere still found time to be a huge supporter of the revolution. Now, Revere was a Freemason, and through that organization, he had made connections with people like James Otis and Dr. Joseph Warren. And in the years before Lexington, he actually became an observer of British troops. We're not going to say spy, but he paid attention to where they were coming and going. He also worked as a dispatch rider. We talked about it last week. He delivered the Suffolk Resolves to the First Continental Congress, of course. But he also was a courier for the Committee of Correspondence and the Massachusetts Committee of Safety. And, of course, the most famous Minette Ride, which we're going to talk about next week. So I'm really not going to say anything about it, just that we know Paul Revere, on the night of April 18th, rode out and was warning people that the British were coming. Now, as for the war years, like so many others, Revere wanted to join in the fight. And like so many of our early heroes, he had a relatively undistinguishable career during the revolution itself. He was made a lieutenant colonel of the Massachusetts State Train of Artillery, and he was the commander of Castle Island out in Boston Harbor, the same Castle Island that we have referenced and we will reference again during the period leading up to and after Lexington and Concord. Revere and his men saw little action. They did participate in a few minor expeditions heading out to Newport, Rhode Island, or Worcester in northern Massachusetts. But his career pretty much ended with the failed Penobscot expedition, which is in Maine, But I'm going to leave that when we actually talked about the Penobscot mission and why it was such a disaster. After the war, Revere went full on into his business. He really expanded. In 1788, he opened a foundry which supplied bolts, spikes, and nails for the North End shipyards. Fun fact, he also produced the brass fittings that are now on today's USS Constitution. The foundry also produced cannon and bells. Now, the reason I mention the bells is because the largest one that he made is still in King's Chapel. Now, I do have pictures of King's Chapel, and I just have to get around to it this week, but I'm going to put some pictures from King's Chapel out onto the Facebook page. Now, I didn't get a chance to actually sit in King's Chapel because when I was in Boston, it was a Sunday morning, and church was filing in, and because I'm a Roman Catholic, I thought, why take up two seats to good Christians when I wanted to go to the Catholic Church down the road? So I decided that I would not take in a Mass at King's Chapel. I will find hopefully some other time in the future to do that. But I hope if anyone is going to Boston in the near future, do go into King's Chapel. It is just absolutely gorgeous. And they have a graveyard, much like the Granary Burial Ground, which we talked about previously. In the King Chapel's yard, there is also another very well-known cemetery there as well. Sorry, I digressed a little bit, but I wanted to, you know, talk about, you know, how cool King's Chapel was. But let's get back to the story. Revere, working his whole life now, will decide to hang it up, and he will retire from his business in 1811. He would be 76 years old. He left the business in the hands of his sons and grandsons. Revere's wife, Rachel, and his son Paul both died in 1813. And, of course, he was a grieving man, but he rose above it with little damage to his health. Surprisingly, a lot of people, you know, when you lose someone that you are married to for so long, you know, it can kind of damage the health at times. And he actually went through it pretty well, had very little health problems in his later years. But the man of 83, he was allowed to pass on and did on May 10th, 1818. 83 is quite an impressive age to get to in those times. He was the son of an immigrant, had a humble upbringing, built his business basically from the ground up, and would die a modest businessman. He would be one of the most well-known Bostonians and a hero of the early days of the Revolution. And, like those early heroes, he is laid to rest in the Granary Burial Ground, which is just up the street a little bit from King's Chapel. Now, I'm glad that I got to do a Paul Revere episode, because there is really a lot to talk about with Paul Revere. And you notice that we didn't talk a whole heck of a lot about his revolutionary days. You see, he wasn't the firebrand orator that Sam Adams was. He wasn't the man beating the drum for revolution like Patrick Henry or John Adams. But he was a simple courier who, on April 18th, was given the extreme job of racing across the Massachusetts countryside to not only warn the local militias that the British were coming, but two of the revolution's biggest heroes. And we'll talk about that next week. So next week, we're going to prepare for the midnight ride of Paul Revere. So today's book recommendation is actually being changed right here, live on the air. Now, I wanted to do one book, but I'm a little sketchy on it just because I haven't actually got around to reading it. And the last few are ones that I haven't got around to reading. Now, granted, I have read a lot of revolutionary books, but I just can't keep up with every episode, every week, having something to write about. or to recommend. So I'm switching it up, and we're going to do Paul Revere's Ride. Now, it will actually work for both next week's episode, which is the Midnight Ride, but also this week, because it takes a narrative of talking about the April 18th night, but also looking at the early years of the Revolution and how Paul Revere was involved. So I'm a huge fan of this book, and I think it is definitely worth the read, and it will not disappoint, I promise that. So, next week, it's the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. Until then, I want everyone to have a phenomenal Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving time. Make sure you stuff your face with turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes and everything else that you can possibly imagine that you would want to stuff your face with on Thanksgiving. But it is still a holiday. And speaking from personal experience, please, please be safe when you are out on the roads. So till next week, this is the American Revolution Podcast. Always remember, keep your partner dry.